This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Lao 先生，请再赴一曲。武功琴韵虽不相同，但原理相通，都讲求大音希声之境界。臣和长空面对面站着有半个时辰，虽然谁也没动，但决斗已经在彼此的意念中继续展开。
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. It is Throwback Tuesday, and we've got a very sort of Asian cinema-focused week for you, at least as far as our throwback and review goes, because tomorrow we are reviewing the period zombie feast, Kingdom Ashen of the North. So today we are going to another country, also a period piece, and we're looking back to Hero, which was Zhang Yimou's film of 2002.
So I watched it first when it came out in 2002, and then I've watched it multiple times over the years, but it's been maybe a good 10 years since I've rewatched, and I love it so much. It's such a beautiful example of everything that's great about the wuxia genre, about great filmmaking, and all of the huge names from Chinese and Hong Kong cinema, right? You have Jet Li, you have Tony Leung, Donnie Yen, Maggie Cheung, Zhang Ziyi. I mean, who isn't in this film?
It's like an ensemble, like a buffet of who's who of all the massive superstars. I really like this film. This is the first time I watched it. I want to know, though, was this a huge film when it came out? And I only ask because I cannot remember Hero at all. I remember all the films that came after, like Curse of the Golden Flower was huge. Jet Li and Fearless was massive. I think
House of Broken Daggers.
House of Flying Daggers.
Flying Daggers.
House of Flying Daggers was also a massive, massive blockbuster. But I cannot remember Hero like at all. So I want to know if this was like was it a late bloomer, or did it gain momentum over time after the future films came out, or was it like the blockbuster of its time?
Blockbuster of its time. Yeah. Number one at the American box office, $177 million worldwide. big deal. Like, I think that maybe we forget. Actually, I'm not sure why we forget it, because in talking about it, we were discussing what movie we wanted to watch, and I mistook this for Curse of the Golden Flower, because I was like, oh, Zhang Yimou, big film, very lavish. Yes, that's the one I mean. And I don't know why I don't remember Hero, because I love everyone in it. Like, Jet Li is a big deal to me. Tony Leung's a big deal to me. Maggie Cheung's a big deal to me. So I'm not sure why this is a movie that seems to have almost slid off the radar, except to say that maybe it's just by virtue of Zhang Yimou's output, in the sense that he does a lot and he's incredibly famous, and this is an older film.
I think it's partly that. It's also that Hero was really his earliest attempt at making something for an international audience. I mean, his films before this have always been popular with the art house crowd, but this was his first, like, I'm going to do the Crouching Tiger thing. I'm going to make something that is not just for Chinese-speaking audiences. And so perhaps the stuff that came after almost superseded the first thing that set all of that off. But I remember it being huge. I remember the posters when they were out at that time. And because they're so incredibly beautiful as well.
Incredibly beautiful is like such a good launch pad, because you can stare at like every frame or every shot in this movie for a long time, which I guess it helps that most of it is in slow-mo, like 80% of the movie is in slow motion. So you can just keep looking at the cinematography, the shots. It's such amazing cinematic eye candy, shot for shot. And I also love the colors, and I think the colors is a signature of what's his name, Christopher Doyle, who also worked on In the Mood for Love. So you see all these like bright reds and bright blues, and everything is just like jumping out at you. There's this scene where Nameless, Jet Li, sort of like collapses a library around him after he wants to show you the swiftness of his sword, without spoiling anything. And then you see this massive set piece just collapse on itself, and it's all like bright blues. I love that scene. I actually went back and watched that scene again and again because of how amazing it looks. It's such a pretty film. It's eye candy, but there's also there's a significant story behind it, which I like.
So we haven't actually talked about the story. And it's a deceptively simple one, I think. Essentially, a warrior shows up at the palace claiming that he mm-hmm. has killed three assassins that have been trying to make attempts on the emperor's life. And so by virtue of having killed those assassins, he gets an audience with the king, and he gets progressively closer and closer. And the movie opens with him essentially telling the king how it is that he came, his version of how he came to kill these three mighty assassins when he's just a prefect that nobody's ever heard of. And so the story is really one of, I would say, 3 to 5 parts. It's a layered tale, and there's technically, so you've got the three different versions of the story being told. You've got flashbacks. You've also got the story as it's currently happening, meaning Jet Li's nameless sitting in front of the emperor. And it is in those layers and in those segments that we get all the things that you just described, Ivan, which is the colors and the sequences and the different ways in which the same characters are talked about and discussed over and over again.
Yes. So all of this is, of course, happening in the backdrop of this question of conquering China, unifying China.
227
right?
BC. Sorry, failed to mention that. the king that he's talking to was actually the king of Qin in 227 BC. So it predates the Qin dynasty.
Yes. So what I love about the film, and you nailed it, Lynn, when you said that it takes place in distinct parts. It's not just distinct parts. The various threads actually completely shape the set pieces, the colors, even how people behave, because the actors are actually, other than Jet Li and the king, most of the actors are different in the different versions of the set pieces and the different stories that we hear. And so I love it because you get to watch these great charismatic people play versions of themselves, and you're never quite sure which version you're supposed to take seriously or which is real. So people often refer to Rashomon as a predecessor or an inspiration for this film. And yes, I get it, the unreliable narrator, the act of someone telling the rest of the film to someone else. But Hero also does its own thing very specifically because the visual language is so distinct for each of them. And I love how much thought is put into every aspect. Irene, you said eye candy, but with a lot of thought, and that's exactly it. It's not beauty for beauty's sake. Everything is so well thought out.
It's so well thought out. And I think the first 30 minutes of the movie is very, very important, because for me, I was like, okay, so this looks like a straightforward thing. He's narrating a story. Then we're going to get to the point where there's going to be a big fight scene or big set piece. But if you can stick with that, and if you are not bored in the first 30, 35 minutes, if you can stay with it, then the movie takes a turn. And then it becomes like very interesting when you see that it's actually multiple films inside one film, like a Russian doll sort of thing. And then you get to choose which is your favorite. For me, number two is my favorite. Not going to say why, obviously, but number two is my favorite.
You can say what color.
Blue. Blue is the favorite color. For a lot of like reasons, but yeah, you know, it gets exciting after you give it a shot. If you can stay with it 35, maybe 40 minutes, then it starts to unravel.
So I think, I really love this idea of there being thought, partly because the colors themselves, Zhang Yimou has been very, very specific about the colors not having meaning. And I really love that, because he actually said that, he's actually said it's purely aesthetic. That's why the red scene is the red scene, the blue scene is the blue scenes, the white, the green, the so on. And yet it's kind of hard to agree. I know that he's the filmmaker. I know that that's what he intended. But in watching the film, the red is sort of where everybody is deeply passionate and melodramatic. And, it's red, you associate it with things like heat and anger and passion. And that sequence is very much that. The blue sequence is a lot calmer, a lot more romantic, more remote. And then white is supposed to be, I suppose, quote unquote, the truest. And It's not exactly film school 101 to point out that the colors have a correlation to the emotions.
Yes, I mean, don't lie, La Sheng Yu Mu. I'm sure you thought about this. But okay, I mean, I'm willing to give him some amount of, maybe he is a true artist in that sense where he works instinctively and he picks colors, because it's not just colors, it's textures, landscapes. So the red scene is staged in tight clothes, very narrow claustrophobic spaces. The green scenes have these like beautiful scenes behind them. Blue tends to be more, you said remote, and yeah, there's always a little bit of a distance, but there's also a calming sort of, and the whole frame for it, which is often blacks and grays, are completely structured. Everyone's dressed in armor. There's lots of pillars. I know I sound again like a total film geek, you know, film school person, but very few films do this so deliberately to the point where even a casual viewer can remember different scenes and think about why they were staged that way. So I don't know whether he intended for us to read that much into it, but the net result of it is that you do. And I guess if it makes you as the viewer feel so many things, then it's worked.
Yeah, I think it's way too deliberate. And I agree with you. He's lying about something. Like, he's covering up the artistic choice. It's way too on purpose. My favorite set piece is green. My favorite story is blue. I think we just put it that way. I also love that there's an epic breeze at all times, like everywhere. Like everywhere they go, anywhere they are, there's an epic breeze that
hair
makes them...
Hair flying everywhere.
Hair, robes, and in such classy fashion. So it's not hair flying in front of your face. It's hair flying behind your face. It's two completely different things. One makes you look like a goof. The other one makes you look like a hero. And the breeze here works like all the time, 100% of the time.
The king's decorating choice is also good advice for cockroaches. If you're trying to avoid cockroaches, give them nowhere to hide. So it's a movie.
Just live in an empty house.
Correct. Cut down
with
the
candles.
Drapes. Yes. The movie is, it contains a multitude of good advice. We're talking today about 2002's Hero, directed by Zhang Yimou, starring Jet Li, Tony Leung, Maggie Cheung, Donnie Yen, Zhang Ziyi. It was a huge film, and we've, I think, touched on some of why that is, but we will be continuing our conversation after this. Let us know if you remember Hero, and if you're a fan of this genre of film, of wuxia. You can WhatsApp us, 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
寡人猜测你与残剑之间也曾有一战，跟长空一样，你们二人的交手也是在一年中完成的，但此次绝非生死之战，而是在想象中。 轻轻点到为止，如此也是为了祭奠飞雪。
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture and Throwback Tuesday with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. We're talking today about 2002's Hero. So Hero is a very common name for a film. We're talking specifically about the wuxia one that was directed by Zhang Yimou. And we've talked about the set pieces and the beauty of the film. And I think that it's just an undeniably beautiful film. Literally every sequence, it's one of those where you can freeze frame and frame that up in your home, and people go, yeah, that's art. But the thing that I wanted to touch on is wuxia, because that is the genre that the film sits in. And it's very deliberate about that. I mean, there's a lot of wire work, there's a lot of martial arts, there's a lot of weaponry, but there's also a lot of poetry and melodrama. And so I think that it's almost the, if you were trying to introduce what wuxia is, Hero is a near perfect way to tell somebody, okay, this is everything that a wuxia film is likely to be.
And it focuses or leans in a lot more into the meditative, spiritual, mystical aspects of wuxia than just the fights, right? And I love that, because the fights often don't seem like fights at all. They talk a lot about how, you know, martial arts is like music. Martial arts is like calligraphy. Martial arts happens in your mind. And all of this sounds really hokey when I say it. But within the space of the film, they absolutely nail it 100%. It rarely looks like violence. In fact, I don't think it ever does. Even when people die or these amazing moves, it looks like dancing. And again, I think the beauty of, I think the film really leans into the beauty of wuxia in a way that Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, I think, did it to a certain extent, but I feel like Hero is probably the exemplar when it comes to it.
You also have to admire that you mentioned violence. There's very little blood in the whole movie. Like you see, there is, I think, one shot where there's blood on a sword. And that's about it. And that's also kind of deliberate, right? Especially if you see a movie like this in retrospect, like maybe, 18 years later? It's kind of odd that such a huge epic film set in like wartime had very little violence and beheadings and, you know, just limbs flying left and right. We're going to talk about Ashin of the North tomorrow, which is the direct opposite of anything in this movie, right? Also, I think watching movies like this, you have to switch off a kind of Western movie sensibility or Hollywood sensibility when watching the fight scenes, because if you see it from that lens, then it's difficult to understand exactly what is going on, because you expect martial arts for the sake of martial arts, like you would see maybe in a Hollywoodized movie, right?
I feel like Hero is both subtle and unsubtle, and that's the beauty of it, because there is a lot in it, like even in the martial arts sequences. If you watch Crouching Tiger, there are similarities in that people are dipping in and out of lakes. They are, you know, zipping across trees. Leaves are a form of weaponry, you know, so it's a very specific form. And there's a lot even in that that's both very showy and very quiet. And I think a lot of that has to do with A, the action, B, the way the story is being told. Because one thing that we haven't addressed with the three to five parts, depending on what you want to call it, is the fact that the story is frequently interrupted. It's constantly pulling back and forth between what you thought happened to the palace, where a very quiet Jet Li is actually just telling the story, a very impassive Jet Li. And so for that reason, I think as and when the movie starts to gain momentum, it also pulls it back. And I actually really like that. I've seen people say that it's a downside of the movie, but I don't think it is.
No, and I would extend that actually to the performances. We haven't spoken a lot about the performances, but again, that idea of a Hollywood version of something and not, I think this movie is great because the actors are so restrained, right? Even in the scene, the red scene where everyone is in this heightened emotional state, it's a very different kind of passion and emotion and envy or jealousy than you would see in a Hollywood film. The restraint that the actors bring to the role, Jet Li, if you weren't watching closely, looks like he doesn't have a different expression in the whole film. But he's so charismatic, and similar to Tony Leung or Maggie Cheung, I think that a lot of that push and pull comes from not quite giving you so much that you figure everything out, holding just enough back so that you want to know more. And all of that feeds into why the film really keeps you going and you wanting to know what happens next.
I guess my only downside would be that the movie is about 90-ish minutes long, and I appreciated the short runtime because I felt like after a while, the story sort of thinned out towards the end, maybe the last half an hour or so. So it became like an exhibition of just set pieces and fight scene, set pieces and fight scene, which is nice, but I think back to back to back, after a while, I was ready for the movie to end. So if this was framed like one of those other wartime movies, like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, it would have been a bit draggy. So it's a plus and a minus. I guess that after a while I was okay for the movie to sort of come to its conclusion because it became sort of a slow-mo exhibition of fight scenes.
I can see what you're saying. I can see where you're coming from, but for me at least, there are still twists and turns even towards the end, right? Where there is a level of uncertainty over what exactly is going to happen. And that kept me going beyond the set pieces. So I was like, oh, okay, I still don't know. And it's weird because it's like watching, the Apollo movies, or it's like watching Everest. You technically know how it ends. I mean, this is centuries ago now. So it's not really a surprise. And yet I still wanted to know. And, I think again, that balance between, it's going to sound hokey when we say it. It sounds less hokey when Tony Leung says it. That balance between swordplay and poetry is very much present in the final act, because it is exactly about that. It is about swordplay, but it's also about philosophy. And that, I think, was enough meat for me to feel like the movie really justified its runtime, and I felt good about that.
For me, it was the framing of the conversation between Nameless, who's Jet Li, and the Emperor, who's played by Chen Daoming. And I think that their conversation is the most real, quote unquote, thing in the whole film. And so that for me kept it going as a, and it sort of ends wrapped up in that, right? Like they keep coming back to this back and forth between these two very powerful and yet characters who are sort of dancing around with each other with words. And I think that kept me going. But I agree, 90 minutes or so is just perfect for this film.
Oh, another downside. Not really a downside, not the fault of the movie itself, but this is a cinema film. It's like it's designed and built for like the widest screen possible. Not the biggest screen, but like the widest screen because of the way it's shot, right? And I guess my only regret was not watching it in the cinema, because it's nice watching it on TV and at home and stuff, but it's meant to be seen with like massive speakers and bass and like on the biggest screen possible in a dark room. It loses out. I think it loses out significantly on that effect and the epicness when you watch it at home. I don't care how big your TV is. So I think
Drip of water and every leaf that falls from a tree. Yes.
It's amazing.
There's a scene by a lake that I think we should just rent out a cinema for. It's so gorgeous. But failing which, if you wanted to rewatch Hero, we would all thoroughly recommend it. Or if you want to watch it for the first time, we're talking today about 2002's Zhang Yimou's Hero. I keep justifying it that way because seriously, guys, there are so many movies named Hero. Let us know if you've watched it, if you've rewatched it. What do you think? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.